Hi, and welcome to our video journalism workshop, and thank you for joining us here. This will be a very interactive event. You'll watch how we go through the whole process of video journalism, video backpack journalism, backpack video journalism. You'll see some of the participants in our class. We normally have these events here in our home, and we hope you enjoy your time with us. Like all of these workshops, this workshop is divided into three components, which are representative of the craft itself, the methodology that we employ toward our finished product. It's pre-production, production, and post-production. The first is the planning sessions, story ideas, writing proposals, coming up with a controlling idea and a title for our pieces. The second part is the production component, when we actually take our gear out into the field and start to produce and generate the media that we're going to use to reconstruct when we get back into the workshop here. And the third component is the post-production, when we return to this base and we rebuild the pieces that we shot in the field. We call this methodology participatory observation, or the creative treatment of reality. We'll get into all of that later. Once again, thanks for joining us. Welcome to our home, and put on your seatbelts and get ready for the ride. We have a wonderful group of professionals here some of you have more experience than others, but one of the things that's really important is that there be a cross-pollination of skills. You're going to learn from each other almost as much, I hope, as you learn from me. So I want you to be in touch with each other and know who we are. So let's do this. Let's have a round of introductions, please. Kalpana, can you tell us, you know, a bit about yourself, what you want to do here, what you want to achieve here, please?
Yeah, my name is Kalpana Biswas. I'm a beginner, I think, in this group. I started doing documentary films. I'm interested in stories related to people in conflict regions. So I thought this was my second career. I come from business and that kind of thing, but I'm really interested in telling stories with the camera about people in conflict and how they deal with it. So I'm here to learn from everybody and from Bill, of course.
Okay. Chad, go ahead, please.
I'm here to learn more about shooting and editing. We do political consulting. We make TV ads, but we rely heavily on producers to help us do that. So we have a cameraman, we have editors and people that help us, but I would like to learn some of these basic tools myself.
Okay.
The basics of shooting and the basics of editing and post-production.
Okay, you already do this stuff. I mean, you already make ads for political campaigns, right?
Yeah, but usually in a 30-second format.
Right. All right, fine. All right. Leonard, tell us about yourself, please.
So I'm here on behalf of my job, looking to sort of dig a little deeper into the journalism side of video. I come from film school and narrative-driven thing, you know, scripted narratives, I should say. And trying to port over some of the conventions for my job. They actually have a live-to-tape broadcast facility that's very news formatted. So we're trying to strengthen our package pieces and add
Can
a
you
little...
Can you talk about your job a bit, please?
Yeah, sure. I work for the TSA in their multimedia studio.
Right. Okay.
We do primarily employee communications. However, okay. We also do some external facing messages, some of the higher end stuff that goes towards the public and checkpoints and CNN network and, you know, the airport network stuff. So video for the government is the long and short of it.
No, man, it's extraordinary how many people, how many organizations, both governmental and non-governmental, have caught on to this idea that we got to use video to get our points across. You know, everybody, I mean, there are 7,000 nonprofits and NGOs in the Washington area. And all of them have websites, and most of them, you know, want video, and most of them don't know how to generate it, you know, or they don't have the muscle, they don't have the money, they don't have the wherewithal, they don't have the imagination to do it properly. It's extraordinary. Okay, great. Steiner.
Yes. I traveled all the way from Norway to come here. Looking really forward to that. I'm I mainly work as a TV reporter with a cameraman, so I don't usually do kind of video story myself, but I've done a little bit of that for TV2, which is the main commercial TV channel in Norway, and I'm working in the news section. And we also have a 24-hour news channel, actually, in Norway, so... yeah.
Okay. Ivan!
Okay, my name is Ivan Mejia, and I live in Los Angeles, California. But I was born in El Salvador, that's where I met Bill, you know, a long time ago. And, well, the thing is that I'm working for EFE News Agency, which is the equivalent of the Associated Press in Spanish from Spain. And in 2008, I was told that, you know, many newspapers require, you know, some videos for some stories. At that moment, you know, I was used to write and take pictures, and that's all I knew. So I had to learn to shoot video and all that. But since the news agency, you know, it's a process in which everybody, you know, does a little part. So I just do the shooting, you know, I do the cutting with the quotes. That's what I dispatch. In Bogota, you know, somebody else, you know, does the narration. And they are the experts, you know, with this software for editing and all that. But I would like to learn, you know, to do the whole process, you know.
Is that what EFE is moving toward, video journalism, kind of the one-man band model?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, like so many other organizations. I mean, it's extraordinary how many of these news gathering organizations want to send one person out there as opposed to four people or even two people, because it's cost effective. Okay, Anne.
So I started my career with a fellowship with ABC News in London, and I wound up staying there 10 years. So I was fortunate to work back in the olden days when there were professional camera people, sound engineers, editors who specialized in each of those skill sets.
So you were a correspondent.
I was a producer.
Okay.
So, you know, my challenge is getting past the old model and, you know, the great respect I have for the professionals that I worked with and trying to get myself up to a standard that I can live with.
Okay. All right. Rhett.
So my background is in imagery processing, interpretation. I have taken a short course with USC Film School that was taught out in Maui, like 2 weeks or something. So I've been interested for a long time, but I haven't really shot that much video. I've shot a lot of still photography. I do figurative work.
Are you doing stories though? Are you doing video stories though?
Trying, and that's why I'm here. I've been trying to shoot protests and things like that for Move On.
Okay.
And I've noticed, I've like shot a lot of protest stuff and interviewed some people, and I cut it together, and it's like, you know, I'm not sure I would watch this,
yeah, you
know. So I want to get better at telling a story.
You want to build your story. Terrific. Karen?
I work at a community college. We have three campuses, and I am in the PR part of it, not the marketing. So
okay.
I approach my staff. We have four on staff. I approach it from newsroom storytelling perspective. I'm promoting it, but I'm not selling it.
Okay.
Just took over the public access channel. We just have a brand new studio that is a year old. I brought in a videographer, and I want to be able to talk with her and tell her what we're doing. I took a real short course through Arizona State over the summer. It was a three-weekend type of thing, got bit by the bug, and I'm ready to go.
Fantastic.
So.
Bruce, why don't we take this opportunity to get you up here? Bruce is a critical part of this whole workshop for a couple of reasons. Bruce actually was a participant in the very first of these workshops that I did in December of 2008, and we've been working together ever since. He adds, his component is he tells people how to get their work out onto the internet, and how to garner a community, how to grow communities, how to, you know, really get your message out there. So it's important that he have a sense of what you guys want to do so that he can help you get to where you want to go.
I'll just introduce myself quickly just so you have a sense. So I'm Bruce Jones, and I live just south of Boston, and I own a graphic design business, Bruce Jones Design. So that's what I do a big chunk of my time. I also produce, I have a software line that runs around the world that I sell online. You'll hear me talk about it on and off. I have a line of maps. I drew every map. I use the CIA a lot. I do every map, every country, county, state, country, global projection. I sell them for business presentations. I am an author. I have 19 books on Amazon, ranging from geography books to music books, and we can talk about that. I'm a big proponent of using the web to distribute your products and how to get your stuff out there. I've been selling online since 1996, so I've been doing it pretty successfully for a long time. I'm also an independent video producer, and I work heavily with public access television, huge supporter of public access, and it's a great way to gain experience and get out in the field. I'm live in the town of Norwood. We have one of the most active public access stations in New England. We produce over 250 shows a year, and I'll do everything from heart shows to public access zoning boards, town meetings, you know.
Where is that?
Just south of Boston on 128. So what I'm gonna do here is I'm helping Bill and I'm filming, but on Saturday I'll give a presentation on what do you do with your video after you have finished your video. And I'm sort of listening today to kind of figure out what to tailor how you want me to push this. So I can talk about either building a presence online, how to use the statistics of Google, YouTube, blogs to figure out what people are looking at, how to publish your material. So I publish books. All my books are published through Amazon using print on demand. So I don't pay anything for it. I just load stuff up. You can do it with print, video, and audio. So it's a pretty broad world. So if you have interest in things that you want to know, let me know so I can kind of tailor that presentation. It's also my intent to go live. We'll do a live global broadcast on Saturday from here to show you how easy it is to do it, how you can take your message and spread it everywhere, and you can do it instantaneously. You know, just, we're live. So I'll kind of walk you through that. So make sure you let me know what you want to do, and then I'll kind of tailor myself to where the group's interests are. So.
Any questions about where we are right now? Let's proceed then, okay? This workshop, as you'll see, as it unfolds, as you'll see in the field manual that you all should have a copy of now, is broken down into three components, just like the real world of documentary production or video production is broken down into. It's pre-production, which we're in now. Production begins when you actually pick up your gear and head out to the field and start to document whatever your subject matter is. And post-production, of course, is when we get back in here, you open up your computers and start to edit the work that you've done in the field. By Sunday evening, our objective here is that you guys have pieces, 3 to 5 minute pieces that you post online. Okay, we'll show them here Sunday night after you're finished editing them, after you're finished narrating them, after you're finished writing the scripts and so forth. We're going to take you through the entire filmmaking process, the entire documentary making process from beginning to end, okay? But the objective here, and there's a long way from here till Sunday evening, is you guys will have your own 3 to 5 minute pieces done exclusively by yourselves, all right? The program is pretty much this. You'll shoot today and Friday from around noon until around 5 p.m. You know, we'll go through these discussion periods, presentation periods in the mornings. You'll go out and do your production in the afternoons. So you'll do that on today and on Friday. On Saturday, if you absolutely have to go out and shoot again, okay. But I'd like to preserve Saturday and Sunday for the post-production period, which is you'll be writing your scripts, you'll be writing a treatment, you'll be narrating your pieces, and you'll sit down to edit the piece. And that process, it sounds like it's a fairly a quick shot. It's not. That process will take. Brett's back here shaking his head no. After I come back from the field and after I, write out all the, transcribe all of my interviews and all the stuff that I've shot in real time, and after I write the script, I budget in an entire 8-hour day for every minute of finished video. That's a long time. 1 8-hour day for every minute of finished video. So if you have a 3 minute piece, you're gonna need, you're not gonna have it, you're gonna need about 3 days to just edit that piece, okay? So it's very, very time consuming. Post-production is a black hole in terms of time. So if you have to go out and shoot on Saturday, we can make that happen. I prefer that you didn't though, because we have so much to do in the post-production stage. And we'll finish doing all the rest of this stuff on Sunday, okay? You know, I have to tell you, I really believe in this model, okay? I mean, I worked for the first company in the country, this company, Video News International, based in Philadelphia. It was the first company in the country to understand that this technological revolution could take us where it is today. I mean, when I was working in Central America, for example, in the 1980s, and you can ask Ivan this because we worked together on a couple of occasions, the cameraman had, $40,000, $50,000 beta cams. At that time, the sound was hooked up with a sound man who carried a separate sound apparatus here. So the cameraman and the sound person were hooked together physically by a wire, right? And the cameraman was a technician because the cameras were so complex. And the sound man was a technician because, that stuff was so complex as well. So the journalists, never actually touched any of this gear. So there was this big separation between the journalism and the technology that was used to produce the final product. Now, and this is what my former employers understood in the 90s, years ago, they understood this technology was going to change everything. Now, guys like me, who are not very technically savvy, to be honest with you, I was a still photographer at the time and a writer and a radio correspondent, but I didn't understand the technology that these guys were carrying around. Now, even I can take these things, get a decent digital camera, acquire perfectly good sound with one of those directional mics and a wireless mic, and I can go anywhere in the world with the stuff in my backpack, on my back, and come home with material that I can shape into a documentary that is broadcast quality anywhere on the planet. This has never happened before, okay? And I just want to read you something here. A couple of years ago, the Harvard Club asked me to come to New York and to deliver an address on what we're calling this model, this methodology, video journalism or backpack journalism. And this is part of what I said to them. And I have to tell you that I really, all my heart, believe in what I said then, and I believe in what I'm telling you now. And this is part of what I said. This is in 2009, 3 years ago. We are right now at an extraordinary juncture in the history of mankind, technology, and communication. Even more important than the Gutenberg press, the advances in digital cameras and the internet provide us unprecedented opportunity. Ordinary citizens of the world now wield extraordinary power. We wield the power to communicate instantly, globally, and in a language, the visual language, which supersedes both the written and the spoken word. This visual language knows no frontiers, it needs no translation, it is contingent on no corporate support, is one of the most powerful tools of our time. And backpack video journalism is the embodiment of this visual language. Unfortunately, this model too often is used merely to reduce the cost of news gathering as opposed to delivering a more effective brand of journalism. The real promise of this model is that it represents a viable alternative for gathering and disseminating information critical to our democratic system. No matter what the new media landscape looks like after the current upheaval, backpack video journalism will be an important part of it. And I said this 3 years ago, I really believe it today. That's where we are today. And I think you all have an understanding that this is the case. That's why you're here, I think, because you understand that now we can do this stuff, things that we couldn't do recently, just a few years ago, okay? 2 years ago at American University, I founded the Backpack Journalism Project, and it's all about what we're learning here. And I have backpack journalism classes, and I teach the craft of over 15-week semesters. And when we founded the project, we had a guy come in, Tom Kennedy, who for years was one of the photo editors at National Geographic. So many of us started out in still photography, as some of you here did, because in still photography, you really learn about composition. You will learn how light works. And light is really the primary raw material that all of us use to practice our craft. It's light, and how light plays on form, and absence of light shadow is it, this is our raw material. If we were painters, our raw material would be paint, but we're not. We're communicators. We're visual communicators. We're backpack journalists. We're video journalists, and our primary raw material is light. That's what we use. That's our paint. Tom Kennedy came in. We asked him to write a white paper for us, and the guy is a visionary as well. And this is what he wrote. This is how he defined the craft then. Backpack journalism is an alternative approach to journalistic storytelling that fuses audio and video reporting, with one person functioning to do the reporting, photography, narration, production, and editing tasks to create a finished product. It is a method using visual journalism to create powerful, intimate stories that take people beyond the boundary of their own life experience and connect them with the currents, the forces, the situations, reshaping our world on a daily basis. Using multiple media tools, backpack journalists create content that engages audience intellect and emotion simultaneously. The fruits of the approach occur because a journalist is being given the tools, the time, and this is critical, and the freedom to assume the responsibilities of personal authorship, to craft a story with value to an audience. Personal authorship is rooted in intimate connection with the story's subjects. That in turn permits extended periods of observation that get to the heart of the story. Because of changes in the technology used to create journalism, changes in methods of content delivery to the audience, and economic pressures to streamline news gathering costs, backpack journalism has arrived as an alternative process for creating documentary-style narrative journalism. A couple of things that I think we want to remember here about the methodology that we're studying these next 4 days. You know, from these definitions and from Tom's assessment of what backpack video journalism is, properly trained. It's one of the problems, you know, with this new technology. It's a kind of a double-edged sword, this technology, because on one hand, now people like us, normal people, I consider myself pretty normal, have access to the tools of television production, okay? Which is terrific. I mean, it's never happened before. This is the first time in the history of mankind that we can communicate instantly, globally, and in a language that everybody can understand, the visual language. If you know how to speak this language, you can communicate with people in China without speaking Chinese. You can communicate with people in Saudi Arabia without speaking Arabic. You can compete with people in Africa without speaking Swahili. Because the visual language is universal. It's universal. This has never happened before. I can't overemphasize, you know, this point. But there's another side to the sword. On one hand, we have access to these tools now. They're all over the place. And the internet we have floating around this house. But the flip side is that is precisely that we all have access to the tools of production. So you see a lot of people out there supposedly practicing the craft, but who really don't have a clear understanding of what the visual language is all about. So you see, you know, their methodology is kind of spray, what we call spray and pray. You know, put a wide angle lens on the camera, blast everything in sight, and then go back to the editing room and pray that something came out that you could use and cut together that makes sense. We've all seen this stuff. We have all seen these pieces and we go, okay, I just watched this thing for 20 minutes. What the hell was it about? I don't know. Or there's no connectivity. There's no dramatic arc. There's no thread. There's no controlling idea. It's just pieces of visual and audio material that's not connected at all by a common thread. So that's not the language. So, you know, I think the vast majority of the stuff that we see on television and especially the internet is there's no sign that the practitioners have any proper training at all on how to speak this language. So properly trained is a key to this whole methodology. Character driven, the pieces that we're going to do, I keep asking you guys, I've had telephone conversations with everybody in this room about what you're doing, and you know, for me and for many storytellers, the best way to tell an effective story is through the prism of one person's experience, be it one person's, you know, one teacher, one football player, one soldier, one, you know, think of Oliver Stone's film Platoon. I mean, through the experiences of a small group of guys, and especially his main character, he told the story very well, I think, of an entire era of struggle in Vietnam by American forces. So the best stories are always told through the prism of one person's experience. Bruce, if this light back there is reflecting too much, you can kill that main light. I don't think anybody would really matter.
intimate and immediate. And we'll discuss how, you know, shooting techniques and so forth to make what you shoot more powerful and more connected to your audience. And close-ups are a big part of that. Time-consuming, as I said, especially the editing process, the post-production phase, is very, very time-consuming with this craft. The time also allows you to really get to the heart of a story by getting to know the characters that you're using to tell the story. This methodology does not work in all situations, okay? Especially when you're doing thematic pieces for which there are no real characters that you have time to spend with. You know, this is not the 6 o'clock news done by one person. I know that a lot of outlets are moving toward this methodology because they figure, well, why should we send 2 or 3 people out now when we can just send one person out? But you know what? You can't cover all stories with one person, particularly quickly breaking stories that need different components and different storytellers engaged in the same process. It's just not the 6 o'clock news done by one person. It doesn't work. Engaging in intellect, in audience intellect and emotion, these are key. In the world, we live in a world of 500 channels and an internet now, and if you don't engage somebody, if you don't engage an audience in the first, studies show in like the first 8 seconds, maybe you have 15 seconds. If you don't do it by then, guess what? They're gone. They're going somewhere else. They're going to another channel. They're going to go to another website. If you lose them in 15 seconds, they're gone forever. Okay? And Bruce will talk with you about Google Analytics. He'll be able to tell you how long people are looking at your site and how long they're looking at you know, one piece or another, and what you're doing wrong, perhaps, in trying to engage an audience. The whole thing here, I think, the key to what we're doing, one of the keys, is the fact that you people want to communicate to a certain community. And you do that by telling stories. You do that by telling stories, and they're character-driven, compelling, visually interesting stories. The sense of personal authorship has always been very, very important to me. One of the reasons why in the early days of my career, I kind of shifted away from being a correspondent with UPI, United Press International, and toward being a photographer for first United Press International and then Newsweek magazine, because you couldn't change my photographs, as opposed to being a print reporter. You have resident geniuses in New York or Washington who always wanted to, you know, put their personal brand on your work. Well, you know what? With photographs, you can't do that. You either use them or you don't use them, but you know, it's hard to change the essence of photographs. That's why, you know, I really love this issue of personal authorship, and I love the fact that I can control every component of what I do when I'm working this methodology, and the final touch and the final brand of personal authorship is that narration. You put your voice on it and you own it. You own it. And that, I really enjoy that. I really like that. Documentary style narrative journalism, that's where we are. That's what we're doing. This methodology is built upon the shoulders of what I used to do for Newsweek magazine, not just covering breaking news, but they gave me the luxury of going up in the mountains of Central America, running around, you know, the back streets of El Salvador for weeks at a time. And I would go out there and look for stories, and I would go out there and look for people, I would go out there and look for characters. And I had the luxury of time, and I had, you know, the luxury of logistics and so forth to go out there and do documentary-style photojournalism. That's what this methodology is built upon.